Okay, good. And that is, we'll start with a date, which I'll introduce. It's Nancy Peroso talking to Mr. Peter Edwards at his home on Lanark Street in Winnipeg on April 8th, 2009. And thanks very much, Mr. Edwards, for agreeing to take part in our Voices of the Grain Trade project. And maybe we could just start with you talking a little bit about when you first were introduced to the grain trade in Canada.
I feel I was introduced to the grain trade in Canada actually in 1927, when I was 2 years old, when my parents migrated from England onto a quarter section of land at St. Bride's, Alberta, near 10 miles west of St. Paul. And that was some of the last land in Alberta that was annexed, for a better word, I will leave it at that, from our native Canadians, our First Nation. There was 50 families that came out, and the homesteads were consisted of a quarter section, and I believe a 20 by 30 four-roomed house with no basement. There were six in my parents' family. Besides my parents, it was three brothers and a sister. And a year after we came, the house burnt down. Yours truly got the blame for that, playing with matches with some straw that my dad had used to insulate around the house. A new home was built on the main road about a half a mile or so away at the other end of the farm, and my dad opened up a store which went broke in 1936 with about $700 worth of credit out. The reason why I'm saying that I believe that's when my time in the grain trade started, I was always interested in the grain, especially at harvest time, and my dad headed up the junior grain clubs in the district. He was the head of that for 8 or 10 years that I can remember, and these meetings were held mostly in our store, and when the store wasn't there, in still that area of the house. So I hung around and at these meetings, and at times the directors from the provincial government would bring samples of grain which the members of the junior grain clubs would grade. I was only barely into my teens then and not eligible to join. I think you had to be 15, but because I was there, I participated, and I remember some good remarks as far as the results of the grading of these samples of grain that I did. Moving on a little bit further, 1943, I joined the RCAF at the age of 17 and a half. In 1945, came back from England as a tail gunner in a heavy bomber, and worked for 4 years in the private industry for Canada Packers in the packing house business, and in 1949 joined the Canadian Grain Commission, which was named Board of Grain Commissioners back in 1949. I was employed as a grain sampler, and in those days what we did, as the railway cars came through Edmonton, they were stopped off both in the CP and the CN yards, and they were all box cars in those days. And we, the grain samplers, would go to these box cars that would be put on separate tracks, and we would, with a ladder, crawl into them. We had a grain probe, and we would take 7 probes of this grain in the car, put it in a bag where it would be sent down to the central office, grading office in Edmonton for grading. And this information, the grade and so forth, and other information regarding each individual car would be then sent by first-class mail to Vancouver or Thunder Bay, wherever the destination of that particular car was going. They were mostly Vancouver's being at Edmonton, but there were certainly lots for Thunder Bay. As grain cars got, the newer cars, heavier loads, or there wasn't room to get in, and this was discontinued, and then the elevator manager, when he would load a car, would, they're still box cars, would hang a representative sample on a nail just inside the door, and we would open up the door and just take the sample out. And then instead of being called grain samplers, we were called grain lifters. And again, these samples would go down to the central office to be graded, and the results onto the unloading ports and to the elevators where they'd be unloaded. And the information from these samples, if they didn't have, it was used in part at times for the binning of that grain if they didn't have the results when it was in. But they'd be rare, but it was information.
Can I ask you about when you did the sampling using the probe?
Yes.
Was that for different types of grain?
All kinds of grain. That would include our 4 or 5 types of wheat. Oats, barley, flax. There was no canola in those days. That came later.
But types of grain?
Flaxseed was the easiest.
And why was that?
Because it was an oil seed and it was slippery and it was easier to shove the probe in, but you sank a little bit deeper into the flax naturally. Yes. And sometimes the probe would be real difficult to push down in a dry year when there was some dust that had got into the grain. It was kind of resistant, sandy. But I was only about 1951 or so. They needed some help in the central office in Edmonton. And I was asked to go down there and work in there. My wife Margaret was very happy with that because that was a day job. And I was in coveralls.
So did you have shift work then?
Yes.
So you worked when the cars were there,
yes.
Which I guess was 24 hours.
And not quite, two shifts. They would hold the midnight ones over for the morning. So there was a day shift and an afternoon shift. But occasionally when the movement of grain was real heavy, there would be a night shift put on.
Were you able to keep fit climbing up and down and into the cars?
You had to be fit to start with. And I was always fairly agile in that, and that was no problem for me. And if I think back on it now that you asked the question, I noticed that all the grain, think back on all the grain samplers, the grain probers, they were all slim people and fairly young people too. So, 1951, I was exposed then to the actual preparation of samples for grading by doing the test weight. Assessing the dockage, that's the impurities, the wheat seeds, and so forth, and other related manual duties that needed to be. But at the same time, you were only 2 or 3 feet away from where the actual grading was going on. And if you were fairly quick with your hands, you could prepare the samples quicker than the inspector would grade them, and you would slip up beside them and don't say too much, and with certain individuals, you got your hands and to see the grain actually being graded. And after, I think about 1953, in a busy period of time when one of the regular inspectors was sick, inspector, and you're under a little bit more close supervision by the supervisor inspector.
Was there quite a separation then between the inspectors and the samplers?
Even in the office here, the grain inspectors, qualified grain inspectors, they had a kind of a little, wasn't a lounge, but a separate little area where they could close the door and go in and have half a dozen chairs, because there was only about four of them. So they were a step higher than we were. So in 1959, I applied for and got an inspector's job in Calgary. And it was the same type of operation that was going on in Edmonton. And so I worked as a grain inspector in Calgary from 1959 to a job in the head office of the inspection division here in Winnipeg.
Much difference between working in the head office here versus the either Edmonton or Calgary offices?
Much broader picture of the operations, because the re-inspections or the regrading where someone was dissatisfied with the grades came back to Winnipeg, to the central location. But the whole operation of the Canadian Grain Commission then became fairly close, because we're all in the same building. And we were over on 303, we were on Lombard in the Grain Exchange building then, in those days. Could I get this right? So that was in 1960. I'm not sure of the year, but it was in the early 70s, and it was just one floor away where I got the position of inspector in charge of the Winnipeg district. And that included the sampling and the grading of car lot samples that were unloaded at the various flour mills here, as well as the terminal in Transcona, that grain terminal out there, and any samples that came in via the mail from producers or directly from country elevator managers.
And why would they come in from directly from the producers?
Okay. A producer could send a sample. When we talk about a sample, we're talking about a minimum 2-pound sample. This is in the dockage on a 500-gram basis and so forth. A producer would send a sample, could send a sample in for his own information directly. Under the Canada Grain Act, and I believe it was when I retired, a producer, if he was dissatisfied with the grade or the dockage that was being assessed when he was delivering his grain to a primary elevator, a country elevator, he could request and ask his grain be sold subject to inspector's grade and dockage. That couldn't be refused him. The elevator manager would take the sample of his grain as it was being unloaded, the representative sample, send it to the Canadian Grain Commission with the appropriate dockage documents. The sample would be graded, the dockage would be assessed, and both the producer and the elevator manager would get copies, and that was the basis.
Very often?
No, I would say less than a tenth of 1%, mm-hmm. or lower than that, than the overall operations. The overall operations. So I was inspector in charge in Winnipeg for only about 3 years, I believe. And then I was appointed chairman of the Grain Appeal Tribunal here in Winnipeg. Now, the Grain Appeal Tribunal is established under the Canada Grain Act. A chairman is appointed by the commission, and he is a person who is qualified to grade grain. And as chairman of the appeal board, he only could grade samples of grain officially as chairman of the appeal board. The act provided, and they were the senior graders, grain graders of the various grain firms here in Winnipeg. And a quorum, when there were appeals, would be two members from these eight that the chairman would select. Naturally, he would have to choose two neutral ones. And what was done would be basically on a rotation basis. And then these two members, when they came and the tribunal was in session, all documents relating to the sample were kept confidential by the chairman. And the two grain trade members did not know if that appeal was to have the grade raised, or especially a flour mill that's buying the grains could appeal to have the grade lower if they felt it was overgraded, graded too high. And so they didn't know which it was. And so the two members voted confidentially to the chairman independently, and the chairman, myself, only had a vote when there was a difference of opinion between these two members. And that, I would say, would be about 10-12% of the time is all the chairman would have a vote. So that was the appeal tribunal.
So the appeal tribunal then, even though they were just looking at a small sample of grain, mm-hmm. could really have quite a financial impact on the the person appealing.
Yes, and the fee wasn't that dollar each. They got a little remuneration at the end of the month. They'd get these little checks. And I think when I left, the appeal fee was $15, and they got five each. Five went to pay for the lights, I guess. However, the commission could assign to the chairman of the appeal board other related duties, but he couldn't officially grade grain. And for the last 10 or 12 years of my career when I was on there, I was asked to coordinate and go out to country fairs with a grading exhibit. And I enjoyed doing that very much, going back to my roots in the country, meeting producers and the general public. And we used to attend about six fairs a year. We attended two in Regina, Progress Show in January. We used to go to one in about this time of year in Lethbridge. Saskatoon was another regular stop. Brandon exhibition, that's in the springtime here coming up, I think, usually around school break. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I enjoyed doing that very, very much. And that was about my extent of the career with the Canadian Grain Commission. It was for 43 years. I was 68 when I retired. And unbeknownst to me, on Friday when I retired, on the Monday, I retired in late August. Quarter to eight, the phone rang, and it was a request from Saskatchewan Wheat Pool if I would come and help them with their grading in the busy time during the fall months. And I did that for nine falls, for about two and a half months.
How would you describe the similarities and differences between the grading practices in the wheat pool versus the grain commission?
Very similar, but simply because it was the same grade definition, the same standards, and the Saskatchewan Wheat Pool and all the grain companies, eventually the grain was graded by the Canadian Grain Commission, so they would follow.
So it was quite easy to shift into?
Oh, just natural, yes. Mm-hmm. But with Saskatchewan Wheat Pool, wheat was the only grade that I had. That was the main one, and I was assigned to that, and that was my real cup of tea. Interesting enough, in Canada Grain Act, when the Act was revived and the Board of Grain Commissioners' name was changed to the Canadian Grain Commission, prior to that, in our Red Spring wheat, that's the main crop of wheat that we have, which is used for bread, there were seven grades. There was actually eight. There was a one hard, one northern, two northern, three northern, or there were actually Manitoba northerns, because it was the Manitoba Act at one time. Four northern, then a number five, a number six, and feed. When the Act was revived and the grades consolidated in the early 70s, there became four grades in this main class of wheat. One Canada Western Red Spring, number two Canada Western Red Spring, and number three Canada Western Red Spring, and Canada Feed Wheat. So, and part of this, or the main reason why this was done, would be the research that was done, that there was very little, and some years virtually no difference in actual quality, determined by scientists in our lab and from our customers using, between our number one and number two prior to 1970. So those grades were consolidated. And the one hard that I mentioned, that was, I only saw one sample that somebody graded that, and they changed it to number one northern fall because it just wasn't used, so it was a show grade.
I have a couple of questions about, one is there a certain, since you supervise so many grain inspectors,
yes,
and worked with them, are there certain qualities that make a good grain inspector?
You have to have, and I'm stuck for a word here, not everybody that tried to write the exam and study for it, and you practice grading, and there was a training facility, samples and so forth, where you graded, and to see grain graded by an experienced grain inspector, it almost looks a bit ridiculous, because it's only a 2 or 3 second look at it, and he will say one or two. And what you have a mental picture in your mind of the minimum quality of that number one or number two, and the human mind must have some computer analysis in it, and it just registers. But there is a test weight, and maximums of foreign materials and other factors that if they're there, they become very obvious when you look at the sample, and then you will have to mix up the sample, weigh out a portion, we'll say 25 grams or 50 grams, and if it happened to be, we'll say, barley that was in the wheat, then you would hand-pick out the barley from the wheat, from this 50 grams, weigh it, and calculate the percentage. And there was percentage maybe 0.2 in number one or so forth, and a half of 1% in number two and so forth like that. So those could be grading factors. Mm-hmm. Same as wheats of other classes. We grow in Western Canada, red spring wheat is the main one, main crop. There's amber durum wheat, which is used for pasta products. There is winter wheat, which is the main crop around the world, but relatively small crop in Western Canada, quite a bit in Southern Ontario, and it's the main wheat crop in the United States because of their climatic conditions. And there's soft white spring, which is grown under irrigation, which is very low protein wheat. And now there's what used to be called utility wheat, but I've forgotten the name of it, which is a very hard wheat. So there's six different classes. So you had to be able to distinguish these classes from one another. And to have a variety licensed into one of these classes, they couldn't look like another variety. They had to have their own distinguishing features where they were able to be visually told apart. Because in the handling of grain, remember that a carload of grain is unloaded every 5 or 6 minutes in an elevator, maybe quicker now. And someone is waiting to bin that grain with like same quality grain, basis the information coming from the inspection and some of the elevators. They won't wait for that. They'll bin it on their own.
And if they bin it on their own, and there's some discrepancy between the grain commission inspector and the elevator company inspector, what happens?
Usually, if it was a different grade, the bulk handling system will take care of that. For example, you can take a good number one and a poor number two and mix them together. It'll probably come out as a poor one because the differences aren't that great.
Yeah. How many years do you think it takes to develop a good grain inspector?
If you'd have asked me that question in when we moved to Calgary, 1959, I would have said, oh, a couple of years. But I look back on that now, it was always a learning experience, and I would say 10 or 15 years experience or more. And experience and long time grading, you just become more proficient at it, and it comes with greater ease.
Going to move on to a fairly general question. What are you most proud of in the work that you did over that 43 years plus, I guess?
Well, I'm proud of it all. I'm not going to commit to any one thing because I had a wonderful career, all aspects of it. I enjoyed being inspector in charge. I was very hesitant to allow my name to be put forward as when I was approached, if I would consider the chairman of the appeal board, because I only had about 3 years with that, and I enjoyed working with people. I knew that I'd have direct staff. But as you got into the appeal tribunal and there was different aspects and different responsibilities and one thing another, and that soon faded you. as chairman of the appeal board, you had a little bit more flexibility with your hours. And personally, that suited me, as my wife wasn't in very, very impaling health then. Mm.
You mentioned that you had gone on the road with the display from the Canadian Grain Commission.
Yes.
What kinds of response or questions, reception did you get from the people that attended those fairs and exhibitions?
Okay. As mentioned, it was a grain grading exhibit, and I was given a free hand to develop this. The commission did have an exhibit before, but now I had a free hand, and we kept it to a grading exhibit, and we stayed out of policy, out of politics, and which was a good thing. But the producers, and even a lot of the young people that came by, junior grain clubs, their leaders would bring them by, were the actual grain samples that we had. And we had them in round, like baking pans, where they could pick up an individual pan and look at it. And the reason for the pans and not something for, because people would be tempted to put their hands in them anyway, but by picking up the pan, and then if there was a little spill, it wouldn't go into the next one because they had it in their hand. So that served two purposes. It suited the customer, and it was the grain samples that they were most interested in. We did have a pamphlet on the grading and on the general information on the commission that we handed out during this time. And there would usually be three of us would be there. If you went to Lethbridge, you would use one of the local staff there. And same as the Saskatoon. Regina didn't have one, so we used to take some personnel from Winnipeg or wherever somebody was available that you knew was would good for meeting the public.
So the Grain Commission then had inspection staff offices in Winnipeg, obviously, Thunder Bay, Saskatoon, Lethbridge, Calgary, Edmonton.
And Moose Jaw in the old days. But that's where there was government terminals located at these locations. And that's where the inspection offices were eventually there. But there were central offices in Calgary and Edmonton when there was the grain cars that I mentioned back in the early the 50s, the probing and sampling of grain cars. But the staff has much been reduced now.
So when you left, there had already been quite a reduction?
Yes. Maybe two inspectors, one inspector, and in some cases some of those points, but those numbers would escape me. Mm.
We have a series of questions here that are all related to the interconnectedness of the Canadian Grain Commission with other components of the grain industry. And I think you've probably commented on some of them, but I just wanted to give you a chance if there's something else that you wanted to say. The connection and what do they call it? Sort of interaction, interdependence of the Canadian Grain Commission and the farmers?
Well, my understanding of the original Canada Grain Act, and I'm not sure when it was written, 1912 or something seems to me the coming, just came to my memory here, And it was demand from farmers who at times believed that they were not getting the right grade for their grain when they took it to the primary elevator.
So at the very outset then of the Grain Commission, there was a really close tie.
Yes. Demand was demand from producers that something be set up.
And that demand and appreciation continued, you would you say, in your...
I would say absolutely.
Yeah. Connection between the grain companies and the Grain Commission. Connection, relationships.
Well, the grain firms... And I'm not familiar with the details on that, but the grain firms were all licensed by the Canadian Grain Commission to start with, and their individual elevators were licensed, and they had a license displayed. So there was certainly that connection, and obviously they had to abide by the provisions of the Act, which directly related to their operations.
The railways, other than having to climb into the cars, did your positions in any, out west or here in Winnipeg, did it require you to deal with the railways at all?
Yes, you actually dealt with not the running trade, the ones that operated the trains, but you had to go to the railway office to get a list of the cars, and they would give you the actual way bills, and they would have them sorted out. And I can remember Edmonton, they would be in little bundles as to which track. They had 23 tracks, as I recall, in the collar yards. That's the big CNR yards in Edmonton. And when our people would be... So the car number, point of shipment, the grain company, its destination, they would all be hand recorded. We grain samplers finished our probing and so forth, and we came in. Then the foreman had a stamp, and he would actually stamp these way bills as being inspected. And then that allowed the railway then to move them on. It was compulsory for the railroads under this Canada Grain Act to, in those days, back in the 50s and beyond that, to stop these cars at Edmonton and Calgary and Winnipeg for this inspection. And at times when they inadvertently, one got on, they'd bring it back. But it all became obsolete with little quicker methods of doing things and so forth.
The advent of computers or punch cards or...
Oh, before the computer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Canadian Wheat Board. Mm-hmm. Any connection with them?
I guess that question would have to go to some of our administrative people that you must have interviewed. Mm-hmm. Did you interview Dennis Kennedy?
He's on our list.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. He would...
So your job didn't put you in any contact with them?
No.
What's your sense of the role that you, in your roles as grain inspector at various levels, and the Canadian Grain Commission plays in Canada's success in the international grain trade?
Well, I'm not going to isolate myself. I'm going to say the inspection of grain. And if we look under the Canada Grain Act, the government of Canada was able to guarantee the quality as stated on the certificate final for grains that were covered by the Canada Grain Act. That not only included our five or six types of wheat, it included shipments of barley, oats, flax, canola in recent years, and there's three types of mustard seeds. And if we look at in Ontario, where there's a lot of soybeans and so forth, and there is various crops, legumes now that are grown, peas and beans, which came under the act. So for customers buying from Canadian products, it was it's the certification of the grading of these samples that guaranteed with, by the Government of Canada.
What was the connection between you and the eastern, well, east of Thunder Bay?
Personally, I had little or no connection at all in positions that I held, because there was an inspector in charge for the eastern division, and so that was a separate entity.
And that person was housed in Winnipeg or elsewhere?
No. Usually Montreal or Chatham.
Okay.
Yes.
Did you ever meet up?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, because they would be come to Winnipeg from time to time for meetings of the senior inspectors and that. And yes.
In situations like this and yours, and especially given the length of your career, asking a question about changes. What major changes did you see over the years?
The significant change was in the 70s when the eight grades were consolidated into four for our main crop, our hard red spring wheat, and then the protein introduction all the years. And that was when the technology came about that protein could be determined like moisture could on the moisture content. Because protein in red spring wheat is significant.
Is it easy to describe a protein test?
I'm not able to do that, what they have today.
No?
No.
At your time, were you doing protein tests?
No, that was done in the Grain Research Laboratory.
Okay.
It was grinding a portion of the sample. It was... I better not get into that, mm-hmm. That aspect of it, because...
So if... But did every sample need a protein test then?
In our red spring wheat, in recent years, yes. The milling grades, like feed wheat, if necessary. Because there's one red, and there'd be various levels of protein. And the protein levels, when I left the industry, were at 1%. Like there would be one red, 14.5, 13.5, 12.5, and I don't know if it was... anything lower than that. Mm-hmm. And protein is significant. I'm an amateur baker, and believe it or not, I'm an old storyteller, and I've been kneading bread. I shouldn't say I've been kneading bread. It is about 78 years ago that I started kneading bread. And the reason behind that was that I wasn't in school yet. We lived on the farm. It was all homemade bread. My mother was a very tiny person, and she had mixing all the way through in those days. And the reason why it was me that was asked or to do this is because I wasn't in school yet. And I remember her cutting my fingernails and washing my hands thoroughly. And by the time I was 11, 12, certainly when I was 13, I can remember I would be making the bread. So I had this 8 or 9 years experience under her supervision that when she was ill and couldn't do it. And I did that until I went in and on the farm till I went into the Air Force when I was 17. And there's maybe a 30-year gap or so in that. And my dear wife, Martin, five, and she was a baker from her mother. And she had lung problems and health problems, and she was puffing and blowing one day when I came by, and I said, you know, I can do that. I'll need that for you. And I went to do it, and I can remember saying, go wash your hands first. So there was a 30-year gap, and I got back into it on a gradual basis, just kneading the bread for her. And as her health deteriorated or got worse, I became the baker, and I bake three times a week now. Mm. And you people as interviewers, I'll give you some samples. But remind me. So, I hope this is going to be edited.
About like what kind of flour is in this, or are you pretty certain what kind of flour with protein levels and so on?
I have my own mix of flour.
Okay, yes. Tell us about that.
I use all-purpose flour and about 20% best-for-bread flour.
Okay.
And the best-for-bread flour that you see in the stores, besides the all-purpose flour, the only difference is the best-for-bread is a higher protein. That's the main difference. Mm-hmm. I better not say the only difference. Mm-hmm. That's the main difference.
And why do you make that mixture?
The higher protein flour in a loaf of bread gives you a higher, lighter, fluffy loaf. Going back to making how I got to know about protein, back in the days of the Depression on the farm, my dad used to take a wagon load of wheat to the flour mill in St. Paul. You would get half back in flour, didn't cost anything. And I remember one year in particular, my mother's loaves of bread, they just wouldn't rise. They were quite heavy for their size, and it wasn't as tasteful. It got a lot of complaints, and she virtually slept with it to try and make it rise. And couldn't. Later on in my career, when I got into the Canadian Grain Commission, especially as chairman of the appeal board, the Canadian Grain Commission's research laboratory baking section was just two doors down from where my office was as chairman of the appeal board. And I very soon found my way in there, and with the help of the baker in those days, Bill Blaschuk, found out the truth. And 1935, when my mother couldn't beat off a new piece of land that was bushland. And that type of land, I know from experience, both in farming and seeing where samples would be from as a grain inspector, is low-protein wheat, as compared to wheat that comes off grass prairie lands. It's just the soil, soil conditions.
So then when you look at where a sample is coming from, that in itself, because of your experience, gives you a bit of a clue of what you're going to see. Is that an accurate statement?
Certain years, yes. Yeah, to some degree. But mm-hmm. the product was what you graded.
Right.
The wheat sample is what was graded. Mm-hmm.
And how soon into a season could you tell, you know, they always talk about a good quality crop. How soon into the overall quality of a crop?
Well, if you're, which you are, you're clued in that if you're beyond grading samples, the weather. If you get dry, warm weather during harvest, that's ideal. If you get rain, showers, long period of rain. Sprouted is one of the worst degrading factors that you can have in grain. And in the grades of red spring wheat, there's what is known as a minimum percentage of hard vitreous kernels, and that's kernels that don't show any starch or starch problems. And starchy wheat comes from soil where there was bush, generally. And your hard vitreous kernel without any starch, visible starch, comes mainly from grassland, prairies, that the protein is generally in this higher protein in the southern prairies as to the northern prairies where it was where the land was bushland.
So there are actually protein maps then?
The Canadian Grain Commission produces these each year for the red spring wheat based on the testing of thousands of samples from the various locations. They try to get representative samples from various, and they come from the grain trade.
Interesting. What kind of training did you get over the 42 years?
As a grain inspector?
Well, good place to start.
Yes. As a grain inspector, first of all, the specifications that you had to memorize. And in the grading of grain, for the main grades, there is prepared by the chief inspector, and there is a standard committee that approves these. They're called standard samples, and what they are, they're the visual minimum quality for the grades that they're prepared for. So for number one red spring wheat, there's this visual quality sample, which is the standard. And then you can put them down, portion down side by side and compare them to make your judgment call in a lot of cases. And this is done, this uses the standard samples.
So every year then there was...
Yes, and the reason why they're made every year is to reflect the type to represent the crop, the type of damage that may be in the crop. Some years it's just only mainly bleach from adverse weather. Other years there may be an early frost. So,
what does an early frost do?
The growth of the plant, and there's no further ripening goes on. So at that stage, if it's a severe frost, and the grain can be it shows up very visually. It's the kernels are wrinkled. If it's very green, they'll be either green or they'll turn virtually very dark green or almost black. So that's very readily recognizable. But it's through experience, seeing samples graded, that your mind picks this up.
Did they change much in the type of grain grown? So, for example, I'm thinking that the plant breeders were always trying to come up with a type of product that would be frost resistant or, any kind of resistance, usually rust resistant.
Right, rust resistance certainly would be a main factor. Excuse me. And resistance from bleaching and that.
So how did that impact on your job then? Well, when they brought in changes regularly.
Well, if I may just make a comment on plant breeder samples, the Canadian Grain Commission Inspection Division work hand in hand with the plant breeders in Agriculture Canada, and they submit samples of their new strains of wheat that they have in the development stages from the very early stages through their 6 or 8 or 10 years period of development for the Canadian Grain Commission to not only assess the quality of these various new strains, but visually, firstly, can they be distinguished from the other classes of grains that they have? So that works hand in hand. The plant breeders work with the Canadian Grain Commission, and they advise them back, because some strains get dropped because they're not visually distinguishable from another type, which the quality is different.
Mm. Are they still, as far as you know, doing visual? Is that still the...
I would say so, yeah. Yes.
Mm. What were the major challenges that you faced during your career?
Well, with such a wonderful career that I had, it was all most interesting. I would say none, really. I just enjoyed my work so much, and the work seemed to fit with me, and I hopefully that I fitted in with the...
Yeah, challenges can be positive things.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So it was smooth sailing?
Yes, for me.
Yeah. What about the Grain Commission? Did they face any challenges that...
Not that I'm aware of, and... But that would be a question that should be directed to administrations.
Mm. What positions would those be?
Well, you said Dennis Kennedy.
Okay.
He was the executive director. Mm. Another person you may consider, or we could bring it up here, is Victor Martins, too.
Yes, I just talked to him this afternoon to set a meeting up. Okay. And was he...
He was the executive director.
Okay.
When he retired prior to Dennis Kennedy, so he will go back a bit further. And he was also the chief administrative officer in the Grain Research Laboratory.
Oh.
So he could speak to what some of the things that the Grain Research Laboratory... Mm-hmm. Dr. Tippett is another name that...
Yes. We have him on our list as well.
Okay.
Significant events that happened over the time?
Significant events. Oh, I would say the consolidation of the grades in the early 70s, from the seven grades down to
that made life easier?
Oh, yes, and it made more sense.
Mm-hmm.
It made more sense, especially when you realize that some years from the reports that you got, and then later on when I got into head office, I was in head office, that you knew that there was very little difference in the quality between the number one and number two on certain years.
Mm-hmm.
Virtually none. So that was major. And the advent of the protein segregation, because I don't know how much, but there is sometimes the protein segregation was more than the difference between a grade.
Mm.
If you had 2% higher protein, I'm sure the price would be of a 2 red at 14.5 would be worth more than a 1 red at 12.5. But don't quote me on that.
And why did the protein make such a big difference then, the introduction of that?
Because it's such a factor in the baking of bread. Mm-hmm. Such a factor.
Is there a point beyond which high protein is not a good thing?
I can't answer that.
No. What are your most vivid memories of your work life? People, experiences? You may have already covered those, but any that...
Well, certainly... Certainly people are. If they're not, they should be. They certainly were for me, working with people.
Were there special people that you worked with? Did you have mentors that...
All the supervisors I had go back to When I first got into the grading office in Edmonton, a grade inspector by the name of Jack McGee. And another inspector who was very good is Al Bailey. He was a great teacher type. I often wish I had more of his qualities when I had staff and one thing or another.
But what did he do that?
He would stop what he was doing, if a sample, and explain the details of it, and he was just a natural teacher. Whether myself, we had a large family, we had 8 children, and I was didn't have my children tell me, "Dad, that you've mellowed. You didn't have much time to teach in those days when you told us."
So he took the time and thought it was important that you understood.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
And they may have been on the job, I guess, right from almost the very beginning, those gentlemen, would you say?
Yes, they had careers, yes. Yes.
People seem to stay a while in this industry. Has that been your experience?
Most, yes. There's not many grain inspectors that I know that left the Canadian Grain Commission that did not go to the, other than go to the private sector as grain inspectors.
B, do you have any questions that I haven't asked?
I guess just going back to the training question, it sounds like you were pretty young when you started, 17, in the business. Or you went overseas.
That's when I went into the...
So you weren't very old when you...
I was 24.
24. That, it sounds like it was a job where you really had the opportunity to learn on the job and advance, because you had a number of jobs.
Yes. A great deal of the training of a grain inspector is your own initiative. But if you don't take the initiative and that... They seem to choose people who did take that initiative to ask questions and to seek to do what's going on at the next level.
And were you tested when you applied? Because you said, "I made an application for a particular job and I was a successful candidate." So did you, every time you moved up the...
In the lower ranks, yes, from... to become an assistant grain inspector to an inspector one or inspector two, there were exams, and it consisted of two exams. It consisted of a written exam and a grading exam in the lower levels. And the inspection division had a staff training division that was the responsibility. And I was, for a couple of years, I was involved in that. When we get to the conclusion, I have a couple of poems that I would like to have recorded.
Perfect.
I can't, you okay. know, believe the poetry that's coming out of this, Voices of the Green Tree that I never expected. So, since you've mentioned it, why don't we do them now? I have some general questions that we can deal with later.
One of them is a little verse that I composed, and it just thought it up when I was grading on the bench, and in the poem it uses the AD, and AD stands for Amber Durum, and Amber Durum is a class of wheat that's used for pasta products. So the poem goes like this. This is, picture a grain inspector and he's got a sample of amber durum, and he's about to grade it. So it goes something like this. It's 4 AD, that's all that it can be. It's green and it's frosted too. The elevator manager says it's number 3, and the farmer insists that it's 2. The other one is a poem, and it's called The Wheat Number. And I'm sorry to say, I don't know the author of it. I hope my memory goes through it. But it was, I remember it being dated 1932. And we have to set up a scene back. If this poem was in 1932, we have to go back that far to set up the scene where there was, before the combines, and the scene is a threshing outfit, and that includes the threshing machine, the tractor, the long belt, usually 6 teams of horses with people bringing in the stoop thing. And the threshing machine had a person who was called, he was a kind of an engineer. He looked after the setting of the cylinders and so forth, that the wheat was properly separated and so forth and that. So he's the guy that's referred to in the first place. I mentioned there was 8 grades of wheat. So they're harvesting red spring wheat here. The guy that did the threshing said would go in number 1. But this, I rather doubted, as slowly down did run. Then the neighbors gathered round, as you know they love to do. And they shouted out in chorus, "It's a darn good too." On the way I met the banker, waiting hopefully for me. He looked it over and said, "It's number 3. So getting quite excited, I departed on the run. And by dodging some more creditors, the elevator won. There the buyer looked it over, put a handful in his cheek, spat it out across the driveway, and to me did kindly speak. "It's a 4, that I'm certain, though I wouldn't care to buy it, as the market's closed today. To the west, to Thunder Bay or Vancouver, wherever he thought the best." Then I sat me down in patience to await that gentle day. For all our summer's labor, we'd receive a little pay. Sure, that grader was a creature who could treat a fellow rough, for in his utter blindness, he had named it number 5 and tough. Outraged by this rank injustice, reinspection and appeal I did claim. And I had to pawn my Sunday top coat to pay the cost of same. In a fortnight came the answer, raising heck within our camp, for I fainted when I read it. Reinspected, appealed, number 6 and damp.
Now they call it, you mentioned Thunder Bay in there, so does that mean that this poem was in the 1970s?
Well,
or would it have been earlier?
I changed that. In the actual poem it said, "Ship it to the east or to the west."
Mm-hmm.
And I put in Thunder Bay in Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
That's a modern version. Oh, very good. Very good, you picked that up.
it was older than that.
Oh, yeah, I remember this being 1932.
Oh, really?
To ship it to the east or to the west.
Yeah.
Whichever he thought the best.
Yeah,
you see.
Yeah.
Of course, it was Thunder, Fort William and Port Darcy back in those days.
Right.
Very good. Got caught, eh?
Well, no, because I think you did say 1932. So, because sometimes, like, Thunder Bay was always there, the bay.
Yes.
But not the city. Are there any other questions that you think we should have asked that we haven't asked you that you would have?
No, I think you've covered it as far as I'm concerned.
We've been very fortunate in interviewing people that they've also been people who have liked to keep memorabilia and pictures of their time on the job. Are we continuing to be fortunate? Do you have...
No.
None of those things? Not no. You sitting at your desk?
No.
No? We'll have to go to the Canadian Grain Commission to get those. Although we would like to take your picture today as well, so that we have...
The only, and I have difficulty with words, is I have... We still on? I have pictures of our war crew.
Ah.
There's just two of us left.
Hmm. So are you part of the group that Frank Rowan belongs to then?
No.
The Air Force group? No.
I knew Frank. No. Mm-hmm. I never joined that.
We are hoping at some point that we might actually get a center established to commemorate the history of the terminal elevator in Thunder Bay. If we did that, what do you think might be something that we should do to illustrate the work that you did? Is that a good way to say it, B?
Well, I know how much, or anybody who has some of the old equipment. I certainly don't have any. Though I'm a pack rat.
You're a selective pack rat. Do you know anybody who might have kept some of that equipment?
Not offhand. Mm. They'd be willing to give it up, I would assume.
Yeah, even if we get pictures of it, that's sort of sometimes the best we could do, because we're hoping to do a website as well, where we can, you know, have pictures of the various...
Vern Duke might be a source for that. You said you were going to be interviewing Vern?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and into that.
He would, if anybody, that would be the mm-hmm. the person.
Yeah.
Vern Duke is the one that heads up, he organizes and has headed up our mm-hmm. the retirees' luncheons. Mm-hmm.
So, I'm getting anxious to try that bread.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to thank you officially for speaking to us this afternoon. It's been fascinating, and it's provided information that is invaluable to the project. So thank you very much.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.